Welcome, 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 everybody, to another episode of Story Trek. Not just any episode, our 10th episode. I'm Marshall Hopkins. Yay!
Woo!
Woo! And I'm Michael Stratigakis.
So this week, we are going to discuss something that is very weird in Star Trek, but happens extremely often, and that is resurrections.
That's right. I know we're not recording this on Easter Sunday, but this is something that comes up quite a bit in Star Trek for a show that's very much a secular show. And it's not just characters' life and death, but it's almost like a metaphor for Star Trek itself and the number of times it's been declared dead.
Yeah. And a lot of people tend to write off Deus Ex Machina stories, but it always raises one interesting question for me, and it's kind of a sociological question. Who is considered the Deus, the God in the machine, the God that makes this incredible, impossible thing happen? It changes from era to era over time.
I think the first time we actually even had a resurrection, if you will, in Star Trek, it started off something really small and minor. The first time we see it, I would argue, is in Shore Leave, where McCoy is impaled by a knight in shining armor and declared dead. And by the end of the episode, he's up and walking around with two lovely girls at each arm.
Yeah. Also significant and repetitive in this time is that these resurrections happen through means that are completely inexplicable. Like, it is always some higher force or some more intelligent or more advanced force that is capable of doing things that human beings can't.
Yeah. I mean, Star Trek has done this since the 1960s original series, and it's continued that all the way up until today. You look at Star Trek Picard, and the very end of the series, first season, is Picard basically resurrected now as an artificial life form.
Yeah, that's a very excellent, I guess, segue into the point that I would make overall about this, is that if you look at the original series era, as I mentioned before, the Deus in the Deus Ex Machina, the God in the machine. Sociologically, I find it interesting what people consider to be all powerful or capable of transformative change that is indistinguishable from magic to us. In the 1960s, there were always specific figures, people or persons who had this power that was, again, indistinguishable from magic to us. And there was always this presumption, I think it's aspirational to say that, you know, there are always things in the unknown that we, you know, always things that we cannot know or that are beyond our ability to comprehend. Once you get into the modern era, though, that force is almost always scientific. It is no longer, or rarely ever, with the exception of Q, it's rarely ever a godlike being. It is always a temporal anomaly, time, you know, something that having to do with time, an alternate timeline, an alternate universe. We have a Tasha Yar, who's really Tasha Yar's daughter, but looks exactly like Tasha Yar, who's simply a Tasha Yar who lived out in another timeline and survived. And you get all these things where science and the impossible things that can be done with temporal anomalies, with physics, as we know it, becomes the new figure of all power, because it's this thing that obviously has effect over our lives, but we don't really fully understand it. Resurrections get tricky, especially when you get to the mirror universe, because in Deep Space Nine, they went to that well many times, where you have Jennifer Sisko, Captain Sisko's, you know, wife, who died in the Battle of Wolf 359. She is alive in the alternate universe. Vedic Barayal, who was Major Kira's lover, is alive in the alternate universe. And so these are moments that are kind of treated like resurrections, and it's kind of nebulous as to whether or not they really are. But I think the real question is, and I bring up Deep Space Nine, because I don't think any of these resurrections really served the story. It always felt like a not all that interesting. What if you could meet this character again? What if you could meet this character? Or what if? And I get that that's a part of the appeal of the mirror universe, but it just did not work out as well as I felt that they thought it did. And then they kept going back to it.
As a whole, Marshall, do you think that character resurrection is either mostly fan service, or do you think it actually serves the story?
I won't exclude the possibility that it can be beneficial to a story or good for a story, but I'm inclined to say that most of the time I've seen it, it's just been fan service. Crafted a good story around that fan service, you know, or provided a good explanation for why this character is back or resurrected. There may have been a very entertaining story or well-played story, but I don't necessarily think that there's a story need to ever resurrect a character. And I say this as a comic book fan, where resurrecting characters is just what you do. You know, it happens once every 2 to 3 years or every 5 years, and depending on what brand you read. I say this as someone who feels like I'm always a fan of the story. The journey continues. The story, you know, the adventures never end. And that doesn't mean that you repeat the exact same adventure over and over and over again. I do want my characters to evolve and to grow and to change. And that means that sometimes characters have to die. So, yeah, I will keep an open mind and say I think that I'm open to examples where it was more than just fan service. But for the most part, most of the examples I've seen have not been the best of stories or for the best of reasons.
I struggle with where that line begins and ends. It's like Tasha Yar is back, but now she's Sela. Well, that's, I don't remember that many fans being like, yay, Yar is back as a Romulan.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really remember that being sort of the excitement in the fan base. I think that might've just been the cast and crew being like, yay, we liked you, Denise Crosby. It's cool to see you back again every now and then.
Yeah. And again, like, did I not want to see Denise Crosby back? Of course. I love Denise Crosby. I think she did an excellent job. I love as a fan, I love the fact that she was back and I got to see her again. But that doesn't necessarily mean it made for the best story. In fact, I felt like trying to explain how she got there was just so convoluted. I'm like, what?
Yeah, I think bringing her back for Yesterday's Enterprise was kind of a good move. I think carrying it forward with her daughter was a little, like, it just didn't pay off.
I will say this. Yesterday's Enterprise is a great example of what I was just saying is an anomaly. I think that that's a great way. That was a great resurrection moment because she was not literally brought back to life. This is an alternate timeline version of the same character. And this character, we get to see her wrestle with the fact that, wait, you mean I died? So if I continue on with this, I'm going to die, and I'm going to die this meaningless death. That was an opportunity to not just return to the character, not just do her justice, but also give her character some more depth and say, you know, no, if I knew that how I was going to die, hell yeah, I'd rather go out fighting, you know. And again, of course, we knew that that was Tasha Yar and that's how she'd prefer to go out. But we got the opportunity to have this moment and to see her see Denise Crosby act and to see the character wrestle with the knowledge and the decision.
You know, what's funny is there was an episode of Voyager dealing with resurrection, but it was a weird resurrection for me. It was in season 6 called Ashes to Ashes. And this one had to do about a character coming back who I don't even remember dying. And then her character comes back as an alien.
Strange.
Do you remember this one?
I do not. I'm researching a little bit of information right now. I can't speak with a whole lot of, you know, expertise about this. I don't recall having seen this episode of Voyager.
It's actually not bad. It's I know a lot of people didn't tune into every episode of Voyager and rewatch them to the nth degree. And but this one actually stood out to me. Actually, is one of the better episodes of Voyager for me.
Yeah, I have to admit, Voyager and Enterprise are the two shows that I cannot say I've seen every episode.
Well, I definitely know there are episodes of Voyager and Enterprise that when I watch them, I'm like, wait a minute, I don't remember watching this. And then I'll see moments of it. I'm like, okay, I remember that, but I don't remember the rest of this.
Yeah. Like if I'm watching that episode, I might very well, oh yeah, this one. But looking at it now, I'm like, no.
Yeah. Well, anyway, point is there's an episode of Voyager in season 6 called Ashes to Ashes. And there's a character of Ensign Ballard who I never remember actually dying on screen, but she's resurrected as an alien character who comes back to Voyager trying to understand her connections to Voyager and trying to go back to live her original life. And then, of course, her character is not able to adapt to a life as a human, or trying to pose as a human, and she's left to return to her alien species that she is now a member of, that accepts people after their deaths of them as an original member of their race. It's a fascinating science fiction story, and it's really interesting to kind of see someone who's very much been part of the crew and all this stuff. And my fault with that episode and fault with that story is not so much that it's fan service, because I don't see it as fan service in that story at all. My fault in it is I didn't know who Lindsay Ballard or Ballard Ensign Ballard was before she died. And and maybe that's part of it, is somebody said, well, let's not make it a fan service that we're going to kill somebody off just to bring them back next week. That might've been where it came from. I mean, it works as a standalone otherwise, but I'm always just wondering, like, hey, how do you guys all know her?
According to Memory Alpha, the star date given for Ballard's death, 51563, places it between the fourth season episodes Hunters and Prey.
So she died off. She died off off camera.
Off camera. This is consistent with Ballard and Kim's recounting of the circumstances of her death, in which they were retreating from a trap set by a Hirogen hunting party.
So it was a character we'd never seen in a death we never saw. Now she's back.
Right.
I got it. Definitely not fan service.
Applause for attempting to, you know, just work in a original science fiction story. There's one moment I want to point out, and it is a resurrection, and it was, you know, no different from what you just described, but this one is a little bit different. So I wanted to bring up one resurrection that bumps up to the horrible trope of bury your gaze. And it's done for every reason that you just mentioned, but it bumps up into that too. And it talking about the death and resurrection of Hugh Culber on Star Trek Discovery. First and foremost, I can't fully comprehend the reason why his character was killed off in the first place, because it doesn't seem like that they would want to, or that they would willingly coincide with the bury your gaze trope. It felt like that they were giving maybe Stamets and Ash Tyler, or not, was his name Ash?
Yeah.
Ash Tyler. It felt like they were just killing somebody to give two different characters more depth. The bury your gaze trope, if you're not familiar with it, basically says that if you have two gay characters, they can be male, gay, lesbian, whichever, and they are in a relationship on your show or movie, that one of them has to die. How this happens can vary from your perspective, but it's a trope that seems to come about as a result of, you know, the same reason that teenagers die in slasher movies. You're doing something immoral, even if the filmmakers or the producers or the writers have nothing, you know, have no issues or moral problems with teenage sex. This is the perception that it gives off. So when Dr. Culber is killed by a snap of the neck due to a seemingly psychotic episode, what made it worse is that this death was meaningless. This was not a, you know, he died trying to save someone or trying to help them. This was a tragic accident that had no purpose. And then he is brought back to life by the power of magic mushrooms. Everything about it felt slapdash, but at least we've got Wilson Cruz back, and we're all happy about that, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing about Discovery, and maybe this goes on to some sort of like underpinning issue, is that it's like they're resurrecting characters even when we didn't even need them resurrected as well. Because we also had another incident, I think this one is a little bit more clear, which is actually a character you just alluded to, Ash Tyler. Ash Tyler is originally a Klingon, Voke, and Voke becomes Ash Tyler. You know, that's basically a death of a character and resurrection as a human. Similar to what we saw with in Ashes to Ashes with Ensign Ballard that we were talking about in Voyager. A character is resurrected as a different species. And it's the same actor, but it's not really done for actor service. It's done as part of a plot, a greater plot. But I guess the real question going back to it is, how do we actually even pay that off, though?
Yeah.
How does bringing back Ash Tyler as a Klingon, like, what is the payoff to him specifically being Klingon? I mean, I get there's some quick advantages, whatever, but I'm sure writers can invent other means. But why can't Ash Tyler just be a POW that Captain Lorca
Lorca.
rescues? Why does he have to be a Klingon spy in disguise? And why do we need this whole relationship with Mary Chifo's character?
Which was a very disturbing relationship to add to boot. It was, I mean, so I don't want to get into it, but it's implied that it's one thing, and you later reveal that it is not that thing and it's totally consensual. Well, we didn't need the implication in the first place.
There's a lot of questions to be had. I feel like they just kind of went through the Star Trek tropes and like, oh, we can do this, so let's do it. And there was not really a consideration to it. It's like, to me, the one of the greatest slaps in the faces to, I think, to Star Trek fans of death and resurrection is the Enterprise. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like all of a sudden you didn't destroy the Enterprise, you didn't destroy the Enterprise, then we get to search for Spock, and all of a sudden the Enterprise is like fair game. You know, like here on out we got to destroy ships. Okay, it's the Enterprise for search for Spock. Okay, cool. Voyage home. Let's destroy the bird of prey. Okay, gone. Bird of prey is done. You know, Enterprise decommissioned in six. That's cool. Seven. Let's crash land the Enterprise D. You know,
Yeah.
it's really hard for me to just go which movie they destroyed the Enterprise in the JJ movies, because it feels like the Enterprise just ends up like falling to Earth or crashing on Earth in every one of those movies, it feels like.
And you did leave out my favorite, where, as we've seen, brilliant combat strategist Jean-Luc Picard decided in Star Trek Nemesis that his brilliant strategy to defeat his enemy is going to be ram them.
Ramming speed. I mean, granted, the only time I've ever seen the Enterprise resurrected and destroyed and done successfully as part of the story and not for fan service is Cause and Effect in a TNG episode.
Oh yeah.
That to me is like sort of like a fair way to destroy the Enterprise, or also
Right.
in Times Squared. That's another example of it.
Yeah.
Those are fair. To me, those are things that are part of the story. It makes sense. And you're not just doing it for the sake of shock value or something. And I think, honestly, generally speaking, Search for Spock was a tasteful way to send the Enterprise out.
I will say this, one of the Enterprise deaths that I liked, but the death of the Enterprise was done so often by that point that it was just kind of an eh, was in Star Trek Beyond. Like, I felt that it was visually done in a way that I hadn't seen done before. I thought that that was pretty inspired. You know, you could have done that in Generations, but of course they didn't have the budget. So I thought that that was, you know, pretty decent. But at the same time, we've seen the Enterprise destroyed by an enemy so often, it would be novel to watch Kirk say, "No, I'm going to work my way out of this one and escape with minimal damage."
I mean, yes, the way it's destroyed is definitely different. I mean, the whole idea that was a crawl, yeah, that he had Idris Elba's character, that he'd used like this sort of like swarm of small ships to destroy the Enterprise. I mean, that's a really interesting, unique sort of villain.
Yeah.
I liked all that. I actually thought some of the stuff when they're on the Enterprise and battling it out between his people and the Enterprise crew was actually some of the coolest stuff in the movie. But seeing the Enterprise actually fall to Earth after all that, I felt like, well, okay, sure. But I think it actually would have been a much more interesting choice had the Enterprise been able to lure, like somehow pull off and get away.
Yeah.
The only time we've seen the Enterprise sacrificed is actually in Search for Spock. I mean, in all the other instances that a ship of the main cast of the show has been destroyed, it's always been destroyed against their wishes, whether it's be the bird of prey crashing on under the San Francisco Bay Bridge and into the water, or whether it's the Enterprise and beyond, falling down to a planet's surface and crashing. The real question with the resurrection thing in Star Trek is, it really does just come down to like fan service, like 75% to 80% of the time. It's not really for narrative purposes that supersede any sort of fan love. And I don't even know. I'm just curious, is there such a demand in the fan base that I'm not aware of, that they want to just see everything come back? I kind of think, especially with television the way it is today, you know, especially after the Game of Thrones era of television. It's like, when someone dies, don't we want them just to be dead and just like, that's it?
So that actually is a good segue to one of the most famous and most recent examples of a resurrection in Star Trek that we've kind of touched upon but haven't really gone into yet. And that is Picard. Spoilers for those who haven't seen the show. At the end, Captain Jean-Luc Picard, as we know him, dies of a condition, and he is resurrected in an android body that is exactly the same as his normal body. Is this fan service? Yeah, I in my opinion, yeah, this is fan service, and this is totally because nobody wants to see Jean-Luc Picard die, and nobody's ready for Patrick Stewart to be done with the role. At the same time, speaking emotionally as a fan, I don't want Jean-Luc Picard to die, and I'm not ready to be done with Patrick Stewart in the role. I forgive this as fan service, like I admit it's fan service, but I forget it for totally selfish reasons.
You know, see, here's the thing. I actually would disagree a little bit with you on this
Oh.
because I think that the Picard death and resurrection is an inevitable part of that story that they're telling for that first season of the show. I think the only reason that he even is broached with the notion of death is because we're entering into a new conversation with exploration of things with Star Trek about artificial
Interesting.
life and about that. And you can't really have that conversation with another character per se in the guise of the show. I think the actual death and resurrection in Picard that is fan service is actually that of Data.
Yeah.
I would argue that's the fan service. If Nemesis had had his death a little bit more tastefully done, I don't think you really necessarily have to have him run into Data at the end there.
True.
I think the arc of this whole season would have been a little bit different. I mean, the whole fact that the whole season's about Data being dead, or maybe not, through his daughters. I mean, that's kind of a nice little like callback in some ways. But I don't necessarily, and you know, and seeing Data and sort of these dreams is to me is a fair thing. But to see that we have to have a scene with Data with a smoking jacket and talking about, you know, he needs to have a fitting death to end his sense of immortality and become as close to human as he can be. I think that's really more because Nemesis didn't really treat Data well.
Yeah.
I don't know what they have in store, obviously, for season two of Picard, other than the gossip that we've heard at this point and, you know, the photography, because they've been actually shooting a lot of Picard on location here in Los Angeles. And of course, now that we're in the modern era with social media that Star Trek hasn't really run into before, we're getting all kinds of bits of information about the show because of what they're doing and when they're filming and seeing photographs from what people are shooting on the streets of LA. So we're actually getting quite a bit of information. And I'm not going to speculate about it on this podcast. I'm sure that's for somebody on YouTube to, you
Yeah.
know, go over each photo with like a magnify, enhance,
Right.
type of thing. But I would argue that the role of the death and resurrection of Picard is something that's not so much a fan service as much as an evolution of the character's role.
I hadn't looked at it that way before. I can see that insofar as that, you know, one thing that keyed into me about Picard is that it is, like Wrath of Khan, very much a story about mortality. And you know, what do you do when you have pending mortality? I guess that initially the idea of him being resurrected felt to me like, again, I read it as fan service because I'm like, well, of course, who really wants to see Patrick Stewart die? Or, you know, who really wants Jean-Luc Picard to be gone forever? The idea that in season two, or just the idea that this is meant to be an exploration of mortality, just going a step further. That is interesting. I think that that's fascinating. You know, I'd be interested in see where they take that, where they're going with it, especially if there's a question about, you know, what does it feel like to be in a completely different body? I think it would be an interesting question to, you know, they did say at the end of Picard, like, we made everything exactly the same, but what if they didn't? What if he can tell that it's not exactly the same? That is, I would find that interesting.
I mean, there's a lot of things I think they're going to be able to explore with Picard in the new season, and I look forward to it. But the real death and resurrection within Star Trek is of Star Trek itself.
Yeah.
The show has been declared dead. It's almost like every time a character's, for every character, major character's death and resurrection in Star Trek, I think it probably, there's at least one instance of Star Trek being declared dead. Like, yeah. We have a death after the first pilot, death after the second season, death after the third season, death after the animated series, yeah, death after the failed phase two, death after the motion picture, death after was supposedly going to be death after Wrath of Khan, was supposed to be death after Voyage Home, supposed to be death after Final Frontier, after, and Undiscovered Country, everybody knew it wasn't going to be the death of it. They just knew it was going to be the end of one era.
That era, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That wasn't really a death of Star Trek. But then we have Nemesis. A lot of people thought that was the death. Enterprise, that's got to be it. It's like that's the last thing that's still beating, last heart beating. Boom, right. It's dead. Okay, then we have the first Star Trek movie with JJ. All right, Star Trek has some life, and then turn around, Into Darkness. Oop, Star Trek might be dying again.
Yeah.
Star Trek Beyond. Oh, this is it. They're done. They're pulling the plug on it. That one didn't do well at all. Discoveries, and then you have this weird new fan base that seems to like talk about, and this is the weirdest I've ever seen. And if you're not familiar with the YouTube fan base about this, you can happily avoid it. But suffice to say, there's a very vocal group of Star Trek fans, if you want to call it that, or I'm not even sure if you want to call them haters. I really don't know what to call them.
Both
that just believe that, the new Star Trek is just so bad that Paramount realizes it and it's not doing great. So they're going to make more Star Trek so they can fire the showrunner for all of Star Trek and hire him back again. And it's like, it's almost like a QAnon for Star Trek. And it's just like the theories are just so absurd. They make no sense. And then they're proven wrong, like within weeks of them posting their theory or their intel.
I'm inclined to say that QAnon and these fan bases are, probably have a lot of similarities. Allegedly, the thing that gets to me is that no matter how absent of fact their opinions are, they still swear up and down that they have insider knowledge that all of this is canceled and that Discovery is canceled after season one. Well, it got a season two. Discovery is canceled after season two. Picard is canceled. No, it's not. They just announced more. And when I had a brief interaction with one of these people where I basically took a screenshot of their tweet from about sometime in 2020, where they said soon to be announced Star Trek Discovery will be canceled before season three. Picard will end after season one. They're going to scrap all of their plans and fire not Akiva Goldsman.
Akiva would be fired as well, but Alex Kurtzman.
Alex Kurtzman, right. So the predictions are Alex Kurtzman is just fired. They're going to fire everything and everybody and start over from scratch. And it's never true. And when you point these things out to them, they block you. And it's like, really? It's just a TV show.
And I'm like, if you just don't like it, don't watch it. No one's forcing you to watch it. No one's forcing me to go rewatch Nemesis again. And I guess I should have not done it. But I've managed to stay away from rewatching Into Darkness for a while now.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of happy to not rewatch Into Darkness probably ever again.
I'll tell a slightly personal story. So first and foremost, I don't know I'm aware of who the Kardashians are, and I apologize for mentioning their names. But just to give you an example, I don't really know who they are. I don't really care what they do. I don't watch their show. And I don't talk about them because none of that matters to me. So if you feel the same way about Star Trek, you don't really like anything that they're doing now, and you don't really care about the storylines or where they're going, just don't watch it. There's a culture here that feels like you're obligated to hate watch and comment. Nobody told you you had to do that.
Well, you can find other things to do.
Just from the basis of fan service. So accepting that it may not be the best story, but it may be something that makes you as a fan happy. Is there any character that you wish you could resurrect?
Character I wish they would resurrect. Let me think. That's a good question, though. Somebody who actually did die.
I have my choice, and my choice is definitely Dax. I felt like that was that was a very rich, full character who had a lot of personality. Dax was a character who was 100% a intelligent, strong woman, and at no point was any of that at all limitation. You know, she was, you know, she was confident and certain in her sexuality. She was confident and certain in her combat abilities, her scientific abilities, her intelligence. She could very well lead a combat mission and fight any Klingon in the room, you know, or she could, you know, discuss science to rival Spock. So I felt like that was an incredibly great character, really great performance by Terry Farrell. Well, I think that was one of her first roles or an early role. And then just to have that character just gone, that's a character I feel like, you know, even if it doesn't. But, and a part of the reason for me is because her death didn't serve a purpose to the story.
No, well, I mean, the whole thing came about because of Terry Farrell's frictions with the TV executives at the time.
Right.
I don't know the exact details of it. I do know that Terry Farrell is, I can't remember the woman's name, Noelle something, I believe, who played Dax after her.
Oh, Nicole DeBoer.
Nicole DeBoer. I know that they're both like on pretty decent terms now with each other, in the fact that they both are at conventions together. They hang out together. Terry's a big Trek fan herself. I mean, she's married to Adam Nimoy.
Right.
I mean, she's very much a Star Trek person herself. It's kind of annoying because it's like such a sour note to let her character end on. But I will say this, at least for season 7 of the show, I kind of like the idea that Dax is having to find herself at the same time that Sisko is trying to figure out who he is.
Yeah.
Like identity crisis wise. So they're both having this identity crisis that they're sharing with each other. So I kind of thought that was cool. That was the only part of the death that was meaningful to me, was just allowing Sisko to have somebody he could talk to and relate to about this. Instead of just being like, I'm out of my mind and dreaming these things about the wormhole aliens. You know, I thought that was fine. It's the rest of it that I just kind of lost it.
I felt that last season relationship with Dax was... I felt like that was the connective tissue that made this version of Dax work, because there was this theme that every Dax that Sisko encounters in his life is the Dax that he needed at that point in his life. Whether it was Curzon Dax, who that's a Sisko who needs a mentor.
Right.
And you have Jadzia Dax, and this is a Dax who Sisko needs a reliable subordinate, for lack of a better phrase. He needs someone he can rely upon, who understands him, who he can trade ideas with and things like that. And then you have Ezri Dax, and Ezri Dax is someone who is uncertain about what she, you know, where she is and what she's supposed to be. And that's exactly how Sisko felt. So that was a very strong through line. And I felt like without that the, you know, Ezri Dax just does not work. It's, you know, it validates the feeling that a lot of people had when she came along, which is totally unfair to Nicole DeBoer, I admit. And it was sort of like, who are you? What? This isn't Dax.
I mean, the thing was, her character struggled with that on screen too. That was great. It was part of the whole role. She's just like, what am I doing here? I didn't want to be here. That wasn't my plan. I was serving on the ship. You know?
Yeah.
You know, and I think she did a great job. It just had to do about the way that the character had been killed off. And I think, honestly, I wonder if the fan reaction to the death would have been any different had they known that it wasn't because of some producer actor skirmish.
Right.
If that had actually been like, hey, this is something we plan to do. The other thing is that maybe Dax's death would have actually been a little bit more satisfying. All right. So thanks for joining us again for our 10th episode and potentially our season finale here, as we regroup things for our planning out what our next line of Story Trek will be like. Please take a listen to our previous episodes if you haven't already and check it out. And subscribe so that you'll get notified when we begin posting additional episodes in the future. You can follow us at story_trek on Twitter. And we also have a Facebook page, and you're welcome to tweet at us or mention at us on there questions that you have about, or corrections that you might have about what we've been talking about here with the death and resurrections of characters. If perhaps there's someone else that we failed to mention that's really critical as far as the death and resurrection in Star Trek, or you disagree in some way about the fan service of the whole thing. But in the meanwhile, looking forward to our further adventures with our podcast and with interacting with all of you. I'm Michael Strategakis.
I'm Marshall Hopkins. Live long and prosper.